This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling on the MLW Radio Network. We are back. I'm your host Striga and my man Dylan is on my side as well. We are here to talk about the shows from Thursday, Friday and Saturday of this year's G1 Climax Tournament by New Japan Pro Wrestling. And Dylan, before we go to that, we first have to talk about something that happened today as we are recording this on the Sunday, because All Japan ran the Osaka Eden Arena, the big arena in Osaka, drew 2,458 fans, and it looked, to be honest, like a lot more, looked like 3,000 people in the building. So from that regards, a success for All Japan Pro Wrestling and also a successful day for Zeus as he finally was able to beat Kento Miyahara in almost 30 minutes.
Yeah, Striga, this All Japan show, it was a big day, and you saw it on the show that they really built it towards the audience that they were at, where the place they were running. And I think that's something that All Japan really does better than pretty much any other company, is run their shows and base it around where they're at. Whether it's in Yokohama, we saw Kai challenge in his hometown earlier this year. You see something like this, where such an Osaka Pro influence show with Zeus and Bodyguard getting big prominent spots. So I think that's so great here. And I have to say, I missed the first part of this show up until the main event. But when I watched it, I don't know if you agree with this. I think if there was a criticism of the main event, we know about some issues technically, and there's been some issues technically with All Japan TV for a long time now. I've gotten messages, I haven't dealt with it myself, but it looked like a lot more people, like you said, totally agree. It sounded like a lot less, though, if you look at the crowd and listen to the crowd miking sometimes. I thought the show was mic'd pretty poorly, especially for that main event that I saw there. I was wondering what was up with that or anything, because the crowd, there were times where I thought that they'd be going nuts, and they got back into it at the end a little bit, but I thought the miking wasn't very good on the show.
Yeah, that's kind of a trend. It has been like that from the very early beginnings of All Japan TV, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The miking of the crowd part, that is.
Yep.
It sounded in the main event that the crowd was really coming on glue, because you finally heard something from the crowd. In the matches prior to that, you couldn't really hear a lot. And you told the listeners about Osaka and building the card around Osaka people. For example, there was a match from the Bodyguard as well, and the Bodyguard is extremely popular in Osaka. And during the match, you could hear the crowd a little bit, but not as much as I figured you would hear the crowd. So that is definitely something they need to work on, because it just comes off much better when you're in front of your laptop or whatever watching the show, if the crowd is mic'd better and you can hear them, instead of seeing a darkened building and not being able to really figure out if the crowd is into the show or if the crowd is just sitting on their hands.
Yeah, it was hard to tell, and even sometimes it felt like you could hear people chitter-chattering at some points in the main event and things like that. I don't know if that was a part of the miking, but it almost sounded like they were in a barn somewhere, early on, you know, the mic wasn't there. But like you said, it did feel like they came unglued at the end there, so that was nice. I don't know what to say about it, but like you said, it is kind of an All Japan staple, so to speak, in these last few months, so hopefully they can get better at it.
To be honest, you mentioned also All Japan in Osaka, I think. They have done a better job in Osaka than DDT has, for example, because DDT is also trying to win over Osaka for them. And to be honest, these Osaka shows they did, the big shows there, they didn't really connect with me yet. For DDT, that is. And the Osaka shows that All Japan runs, they are much better, usually. This one, not so much. It was a show that was basically based around this one match in the main event. In the opening, Yoshitatsu, Ultimo Dragon, Hiroaki Moriya, and Carbel Ito beat Takao Omori, Atsushi Maruyama, Shoichi Ushida, and Toru, as you mentioned here, heavily influenced from the Osaka-based wrestlers. There is Moriya, who is an independent wrestler in Osaka, same as Ushida and Toru. Then was a match in the second position here, a preview for the Junior Tag Battle of Glory. Koji Omoto, Tajiri, Yohei Nakajima, and Black Tiger 7 beat Atsushi Aoki, Hikaru Sato, Masaki Mochizuki, and Shun Skywalker. When Iwamoto made Atsushi Aoki tap out to a shoulder hold, as he is a former judo practitioner. And this match was pretty good, I thought. It's so funny how they now try to bring back Koji Iwamoto to the position where he was 1 year ago and where he should have won the junior title, and maybe they are finally doing that here.
Let's hope so. Let's hope it's a long-term plan, just like Zeus.
Yes, exactly. Joe Doering beat Jenny Valletta in 7 minutes with the Revolution Bomb. There is nothing to say about this match. It was a match, and I've seen Valletta in the match for the World Tag Title, and I've seen him in a six-man tag match before on this show, on this tour, and to be honest, he hasn't given me anything that I would say he needs to come back to All Japan. But he will come back. He will be in the in the Royal Road tournament, where he faces Zuwama, I think, in the first round. Well, he's a big guy. I think they are trying. They are trying to get new foreigners in, and with one of the foreigners who was in the next match, this has worked out for them because Dylan James is leaving a great impression recently.
You know, that Valletta, I have to give All Japan credit for one thing, and that's they really have a way of finding some, diamonds in the rough, so to speak, or attempting to find them, and people you wouldn't immediately think of and going for them. So I think that's a good thing to bring somebody like this who's pretty much more or less an unknown and giving them a shot. I think that's kind of cool because if you hit on him, you could have another Joe Doering, you know, if you get one of these unknown that's guys true. That sticks around. It's not always going to work out, though, unfortunately, with certain wrestlers and certain people. Dylan James, you know, it's funny because in 01, when he was originally in Japan, he had a pretty up and down career and things of that nature. When he came to All Japan, it seemed like he was really motivated in terms of just his body. Obviously, he got into great shape, so to speak, really working out and working hard. And to see him now where he's at, I think really it turned around when he faced Miyahara for the Triple Crown title. I think that match really showed people what he can do and what he can bring to the table and that he has a place on this roster, so to speak, because I think there were some questions about him. In the Champion Carnival, they didn't really give him a chance to stand out with matches. They did more story-based matches with quick kind of matches more than epics, so to speak. So he finally got that big match versus Kento. And he's had this tag run with Ryoji Sai. He's definitely fitting in on the roster well. Just look at similar to Yoshitatsu last year. I think if you could get a guy that you can pair him with a tag team with, give him a big match that he can stand out with, that gives this guy's confidence and really gets him a chance here. And what did you think of him in this match here?
You know, I especially like when he works with smaller people in All Japan. For example, with a Yohei Nakajima. Or in this match, he has worked with Billy Ken Kidd, also of Osaka Pro fame. But mostly, of course, here with Zuwama and Shuji Ishikawa, and also that works out pretty well for him. So I think here again, he looked motivated again. He is there to stay, and he wants to really pay All Japan back for basically giving him the spot on the roster without him really leaving an impression in the first place. They gave him the spot on the roster right away, you know. And so it's working out for him. And it's funny that Keiichi Sato is also back in All Japan. He sneaked his way back to the promotion that he left. Yep. So
Watch Suzuki. Watch Kotaro started working with them again. He had to come back. Yeah. I said that's what it is. I'm sure Dylan James. I'm sure Sai put in a good word for him too. You know that Sai is a master negotiator.
Oh yeah.
So he used his powers to get James a spot in and the tag titles too.
Yeah. So decent six man tag match here. This probably set up Shuji Ishikawa for a Triple Crown challenge in late August because he beat Dylan James with the Fire Thunder. And you mentioned him already in the next match. Ryuji Sai lost his All-Asia Heavyweight Championship to the Bodyguard in 19 minutes and 26 seconds when Bodyguard pinned him with the bounce, and that looked a little awkward because this move, it's pretty rough to do, and the Bodyguard isn't exactly the greatest technical wrestler. And Sai slipped from Bodyguard, and he had to catch him from falling and then just dropped him onto the mat, and it didn't look good at all. And well, these kicks from Bodyguard, they look so goofy, but this guy has something about him. You know that he's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but he has something about him that you just care for his matches, and you just care for the story, and you care for the guy. And that's what happened to me here again. So I really loved that Bodyguard was able to win this championship here, only his second singles title in his career ever.
Yeah, just a feel-good win for the home crowd. And it set up the moment for the main event, too, of both of the big guns having the singles titles in All Japan. So nothing wrong with that. Good decision. I don't know how long he can last as champion. But, hey, so, like I said, Sai, they got this belt. Who knows how far he could go with it. Maybe that'll set up a champion versus champion match with Zeus down the road.
Maybe. Although I don't think that it really will. But we'll see. Yeah, the Bodyguard won the championship, and another title change occurred in the semi-main event of the show when Naoya Nomura and Yuma Aoyagi beat Jun Akiyama and Yuji Nagata in 22 minutes. And I gotta say, this felt a little flat, because Nomura and Aoyagi, you really felt that this title change was rushed, because Aoyagi only returned in June, then they lost their first attempt against Nagata and Akiyama, and then they were immediately given the second opportunity without them having any kind of road to earn another title shot. They just said, well, we want to have a match again, and that's what happened. And in this match, Akiyama was throwing everything at Aoyagi, and Aoyagi kept kicking out with the help of Naoya and Nomura sometimes, and then in the end, it was just a little double teaming on Akiyama, and Aoyagi hit the Rockstar Buster, his version of the Fisherman Buster, and that was it. You didn't really feel the energy or the fire from Nomura and Aoyagi in this one.
You know, like what your point you made, I remember thinking that same thing when they first announced it as the next match, that for them to just lose and then go back to challenge again right away.
Yeah.
I mentioned that on Twitter. Somebody said that they were telling a larger story just for doing that. But no. I don't know about that. I think this is just worse.
The only story they were telling with this one was that everybody was expecting Aoyagi and Nomura to win.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of negative reviews. Pretty much gave it away. Yeah, I've seen a lot of negative reviews on this match on Twitter, too. It's a shame. That Akiyama-Nagata title reign really is kind of a disappointment, I think, in the grand scheme of things, because I was so happy when they won the titles, could have a great title reign in my mind. They didn't really do it. Not all their fault, because like you said, this match seemed like it was kind of doomed to fail with how they set it up, but I think their reign could have been a lot more overall. And I'm hoping for the best for the young guys, because I love them. Like, I think they're great talents overall. I think they've really, both of them have really improved over the years. So hopefully they can get off on the right foot and really make that change forward. But it definitely doesn't sound like it was the best start to their title reign overall.
Yeah, definitely not. But glad for Aoyagi and Nomura that they are back on track with their tag team. And it just seems like that Akiyama just wanted to continue their plan with them as All-Asia Tag Champs. And that's fine. And I'm sure that they will be able to deliver a better match in their next defense. And for the main event of this show, as I mentioned, almost 30 minutes, Zeus was finally able to climb Mount Olympus to win the Triple Crown from Kento Miyahara in a match that essentially had two parts. The first one was a crowd brawl or an outside brawl that didn't set the world on fire? No. No. Totally. But the second half was much better with Zeus constantly getting out of Kento Miyahara's German suplex attempts, and they build it up perfectly with Zeus on the outside. Either it was a real injury or it was a worked injury. I'm leaning towards it was a work, because he he kind of seemed that he had hurt his hand or his arm. And in the process, he was always able to escape from the German suplex attempts, even from the straitjacket German suplex attempts. He was able to break free from them in a real powerhouse fashion, which got the crowd really going. Then they had this great moment where Miyahara kicked out of the jackhammer. I was so sure that would be the finish.
Oh, that was a great near fall.
Yes,
that was
amazing, near fall. Amazing near fall. Miyahara came back with some blackouts, but Zeus was able to kick out again here, and then finally was able to hit the jackhammer for the three count and for the feel-good moment in his hometown. Exceptionally great second part of the match, and the first part really sucked.
Yeah, I, even in my notes, I literally said this was lame about the brawling section earlier on. I didn't like that. I thought the match picked up when Zeus did his no-handed plancha over the top rope, which I thought was pretty big. The miking still wasn't good at that point. And I did say there was a part where Zeus had the count-out tease where he flopped out, and he sold it really well, but because he is him, and he's so jacked, it was really amusing how he flopped back to do it. I thought that was really funny. The crowd rallied behind them because there was this part where there was this dual fighting spirit spot where they finally had this great strike exchange. They were going all out at it. I thought that was one of the highlights of the match. And also Kento beating Zeus down to a big heel reaction. It made him look like a street thug how he did it. It was just straight up pounding him down. I thought it was a great spot. They did a spot that I really didn't like, actually, at the end, because Kento went for the shutdown German, and Zeus' big escape was to kick his knee out, and immediately afterwards, Kento did three blackouts in a row, like, on the knee. Yeah. I didn't like that. I called him Kento Omega.
We have been over this, yeah.
Yes, and I still don't like it. If Omega gets criticism, even though Kento is my boy and a great champion, I have to criticize that, because that was out of there. And Zeus hit a wild straight punch. This was right before he won. He hit this great punch spot that I thought was awesome. It felt very satisfying and like the right thing. I wish the crowd had been, you know, I wish we could have got that huge reaction where it would have blown up when he got the three counts, because I think it was there. But he had a good reaction, and obviously, you know, they were going nuts. After the match, he was holding a baby in the ring.
Yes, so, this baby was so amazing. Here, I don't know where that came from, if that was his baby
Who's
or not.
Baby?
I have no idea. Maybe it was just the Tanahashi reaction of women just throwing their babies at Zeus as the champion now, and this baby immediately started crying when he had it in the ring. Yeah, it seemed a little awkward. Yeah,
yeah, baby. Look,
he was shaking everybody's hand ringside, and I was ready for the show to go on another 2 hours of just Zeus shaking hands and kissing babies.
Yes, it's like
because
he's the president.
That's his job now as the champion.
Yes, especially in his hometown. They had a great moment with Zeus putting the belt on Bodyguard, too. I thought that was pretty cool. And Bodyguard obviously lifted him up on the shoulders. I was going to laugh if he attacked him and challenged him for the title. I was prepared for it in my mind. I always, my Americanized wrestling mind always expects a turn at some point. But I was glad. I was thankfully that nothing like that occurred. But really great moment overall. And like I said, it was really a satisfying match. I can't complain about it. Like you said, the early part wasn't that good, but still fun match. Really satisfying moment. You got a baby in the ring. What more can you ask for your champion?
Well, that's basically it. That's what it comes down to. And let's see, Dylan, we are switching gears now. Let's see how satisfying...
Before we move on, since I asked about it on Twitter, I want to shout out some people because I asked about the online reaction from my good friends. And I got some numbers on a scale of 1 to 10. I asked about that. And my man Robert, he said the main event bumped it up to a 7, but didn't think much of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Stop spot, 7. Technical issues and the continuous sound problems for big shows as well, as not much happening in the undercard takes it down a bit.
Yeah.
All matches meant to deliver did, though, even if the All-Asia tag one was clunky for large parts.
Yeah,
I think that's a fair assessment.
I'm leaning towards a 6 out of 10.
Yeah,
maybe,
well...
Maybe somewhere between 6 and 7, maybe, because of Maine.
Yeah, Jesse gave it a 6, too. She messaged me. Mm. She said she didn't even like any of the big three matches. And they all had pretty big flaws, but you can overlook the most of them with the bodyguard match. Yeah. I didn't like All Asia Tag at all, and between the brawl and Kento going full Mar Fuji there, I wasn't really a big fan of the main event either. Yeah, I didn't like the knees either, overall. And Brother Mort, he messaged me, he said, one match show really, but a good match it was.
Yes, it was. We have it right now in the Cage Match database, 13 votes in, a rating of 8.93 for the main event.
Wow!
Yeah, it's a little high, maybe, because of the first part of the match. But yeah, people really liked the second half, I think. And that's what lasted.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's just a satisfying ending. Like, if the build-up to Zeus wasn't there, and I think the fact that the fans support Zeus so much, not just in Osaka, but Western fans as well, because I think everybody's really been calling for Zeus to get this big moment for a long time now, and he finally did it, and I think it made for a very memorable moment overall in the year.
Definitely. So, you gave it a, or you would lean towards a 6 or a 7, maybe 2, if you would see all the matches, I think. And as we are now switching gears to the G1 Climax, we have a show that is currently rated 7.85 on Cage Match. It's day 8 of the G1 Climax from this past Thursday in Nagaoka, which opened with Toru Yano losing to his good friend Hiroki Goto in 2 minutes and 17 seconds. I think this one was a Toru Yano match you'd really like to see.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing going on. Goto had no time for this bullcrap and just destroyed him in 2 minutes. Like, this is the perfect Yano match for me. Somebody who doesn't want to play around, doesn't want to give in to shenanigans. And also, and the real reason it was probably like this more than that was Goto, and I will talk about this a little bit in his next match, which we can talk about later. I think Goto put his heart into the first 3 matches he had and really gave us, really to me, was the best person for the first 3 matches. And they were so physical and so taxing that this 2-minute match was perfect to bounce back from.
For the next match, I would like to read a tweet that I got for Tama Tonga and Tetsuya Naito from the user Connor Torpe. He said, I really didn't like the DQ stuff that the OGBC guys are doing, but seeing them work it into a meta-narrative has turned me around on it a bit. And I think that sums it up perfectly for me as well, because they are these DQs, they have now kind of backed away from it with Tama Tonga, but they are telling different stories. With him here now, they are telling two different stories. One story is that he's now trying to win matches, and the other part of the story is that he's still getting DQ'd. So I still see that they are going for an overall point of that story, but the thing is that I'm on this show for the 4th time in a row, and I try to come up with a different story now for this storyline. Mm-hmm. Isn't a good sign.
Yeah, it's crazy how that works. Yeah. Like, we know the story isn't having good matches.
the one thing that I noticed here on this one is that I on the last show I was saying that I'm leaning towards that the crowd is really just hating the stuff. But here in Nagaoka, to me, it seemed that it has gotten Tama Tonga over to a certain degree, because the crowd was really, really into this match, and it also helped that the crowd was really behind Tetsuya Naito, but they were also really content on booing Tama Tonga. So I think in that aspect, it's kind of working out, but it's very confusing.
That's the thing. We'll talk about, to me, the crowd thoughts were told in a match on the next show, like what they really think of this. Because without Naito, he really doesn't add anything on its own. And not just Naito. You had the run-ins from everybody. You had, like, how many run-ins were in this match? 5 or 6? You had Evil come
Bushi. Evil, Fale, and Fale. Loa. Yeah.
Yeah, so they had all these different things going on and different moving parts. And, like I said, Naito's so over. Like, you know, it just is what it is. I want to see him against other people. And, like I said, I think we can talk about that more later on. with the Falaise match that he had and the crowd reaction to that, I think said way more about this storyline than this match overall. Because, yeah, Naito is going to be over, and he's very popular, obviously, and very popular in this tournament, too, getting a really big push. A lot of people have graded this match higher than a lot of the other ones, but I think a lot of the run-ins gave it kind of a different vibe to it than just the typical DQ and whatnot.
Well, it's essentially, it isn't that different from another Tama Tonga match when you count in the run-ins. And again,
yes,
I've made this point earlier on other shows where we discussed here. When these interferences add to a match, like it kind of did here with Naito outsmarting the Tongans, I'm fine with it.
I like this better than the Sonata match.
It's not my favorite kind of stuff, but I can live with it, and I was I liked it because the crowd was so into it.
And I think the crowd really lifted it because of Naito, but I think also I liked it better because the odds were even instead of just... Because that's a problem. Really, everybody's in a faction, pretty much, or nearly everyone. This shouldn't be allowed to happen. Everybody should have backup running out. And it's nice that we actually saw it come into play here, and I thought it helped a little bit. I still wouldn't call it any kind of good match, but still better than most Tonga matches so far, I would say.
Back to a great match. Zack Sabre Jr. beat Tomohiro Ishii, 14 minutes, 35 seconds. Rated 8.58 right now on Cage Match. I guess you can say Tomohiro Ishii is really the MVP of this tournament so far. He has had at least three incredible matches. And all the other matches were at least very good. Remember back to the Toru Yano match even.
Yep.
And here with Zack Sabre Jr., he had another great match. Zack went for Ishii's arms, and in the end, that paid off for Zack as he was able to tap out Tomohiro Ishii in a great-looking armbar.
I like this match. I think his other two matches really blew everything away in this tournament. But this was a really good match, too. I like that Ishii worked so well with Zack. I think even just doing Zack Styles, he tried to grapple a little bit here, and he sold Zack's submissions really well and gave him a lot here. And I think that it made for a really great match, and I was happy that Zack got the win. I think he's someone that's really in for a good streak going forward if you look at how the tournament's lining up. And Ishii had a lot of momentum going into this match after that big win over Goto. So I thought everything about this was really good. I think I liked last year's match they had a little better overall, but still, really strong match from Ishii and Zack again. They wrestled on the last night at the G1 last year. I thought that was a really great match, and this was a really good match. But I actually liked the main event better than this on the show.
Me too. I think we'll agree that we didn't like the next match so much. Because
yes.
Kenny Omega went to 8 points, beating Juice Robinson, who was still at 0 points at this point, in 15 minutes 31 seconds in the rematch from last year. And they kind of went back to last year's match when they were trying to tell the story that Juice was again going to reverse the Katayoko no Tenshi. But they were still going for this for the cast story, and what a payoff we got for the cast. Dylan, we're going to talk about that later. Everything was good here. That's objectively was a good wrestling match, but I never really got into the match and into the story. So for me, it was a very long 15 minutes.
Wow, you know, I thought this was a solid match. Not as good as last year's again, I thought, between these two. I thought last year's was a lot better, had a lot more drama, and the crowd was into it more, too. Here, we just saw... I thought Omega, he tried to do a little bit of back and forth with the leg and going back to the cast, but in the end, it all just ended up paying off. Never mind the leg or whatever, he still hit the V-trigger a bunch of times and did his usual stuff going on here. So I thought it was a solid match, but definitely not anything that's... you know, raising the roof, so to speak, or raising the bar of the tournament.
Raising the roof was what Kota Ibushi and Sanada did in the main event of that show. 22 minutes, 23 seconds, 9.01 right now, a cage match. Absolutely beautiful pro wrestling. It's crazy how Sanada We talked about him on this show before a couple of times, and we kind of criticized his flawless style. But it's amazing how his flawless style works with guys like Zack Sabre Jr., with Kota Ibushi, and then later on also with Kenny Omega on the show on Saturday. And here, he in this tournament with different opponents, he is kind of wrestling mirror matches, where he goes in the same direction when you're talking about wrestling styles as his opponents are. For example, here with Kota Ibushi, I remember vividly that they did this dropkick sequence where they both did dropkicks in the end. And in different kind of scenarios in this match, Sanada and Kota Ibushi kind of working the same style, and Sanada was kind of doubling or copying what Kota Ibushi did, and it worked out for him in the end because he got the win here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I said this on Twitter. To me, out of all of the people in this tournament, they're really giving big pushes to guys like Switchblade, Tonga, the Fire Squad, and all of that. But if you want to look at somebody who's really gained the most out of all of this, Sonata, to me, is coming up and really stepping up his game, not just into a push or anything, because he's got that big match with Naito, which is always, they're constantly building to on the undercards and not fist bumping and everything. Yeah.
And also because it's something that I brought up when we talked about the Tama Tonga match. He is wrestling this tournament on his own. He doesn't want to have any run-ins in his matches. He doesn't want Los Ingobernables to be there when he has problems. He did it on his own, and he gained a lot from that. That's what I said on this show. And he gains a lot from these matches he has with Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega 2. And I hope that they are finally kind of pulling the trigger on him like I predicted 2 years ago.
Like I said, I think also you do have to say, I don't want to jump ahead because I think people are really fast to jump a little too fast, because these guys, he's wrestling some of the best wrestlers in the world in this B block. He's having so many great opponents to go with, but he's stepping up too. I wouldn't say anything bad about him, but he does. I still think you have to see what he does beyond the G1 and beyond the B block of G1, especially the best block in G1, as some people would call it. But I really love his performances. To me, he's been one of the standout people of this whole thing, and a breakout star bordering on. I cannot fault him at all. I think he's really improved in a lot of the ways that I criticized him before, because even when you were calling for his push, I cautioned against that due to his lack of charisma. But he's really showing it now.
When we're talking about top five performers in the tournament, I would really put Sanada into these top five.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you could definitely make that case. I'd have to think about it. Really, anyone of the top eight of B Block could reasonably be a top five. But I think he'd probably be up there for me. I'd take him over Naito. If you just look at that, I think Sonata stood out more than Naito has.
Wow, that's a statement too. Yeah, and
especially after his last match.
Yeah, and it's a story that has been going on since this tournament started, that B block is really outshining the A block. And when talking about top five performers, it's really tough to name someone from block A and put him over someone from block B. And I think we once again saw it here on this next show we had on Friday from Hamamatsu, on a show that really only had one outstanding match, and one match you wouldn't really need to see, with Okada versus Yoshihashi. And everything else, I thought Tanahashi versus Makabe was better than expected, because Makabe is really working hard. Evil versus Page was good, but everything, the other two matches, overall, it's basically a one-match show.
Let me just tell you my star ratings here. I think this would be a very quick breakdown of this, something that everybody can understand, okay?
Yeah.
Suzuki Elgin, 3 stars. Page Evil, 3 stars. Tana Makabe, 3 stars. White Fale, dud. Yoshihashi Okada, 3 3/4. I thought Yoshihashi Okada was the best match of A Block so far. I haven't given a single match from A Block over 4 stars in my rankings.
Really?
What about
the Elgin and Hangman match?
Oh, that was a good match, but it wasn't that wasn't a great match. That was a good match, but I didn't think it could touch.
Not that block. Good. Yeah. I can see your point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's funny because we talk about it, and I look at these A-block matches, and Yoshihashi has all 3 of my top 3 matches against Okada, Makabe, and Elgin. And Paige, that Paige has a couple of good ones too. I'm not trying to diss Paige or anything here. I think he's been one of the standout performers of A Block. But I don't think there's been any great matches. And even these Yoshihashi matches that I like really aren't as good as a lot of, like, I don't consider them great matches that will stand the test of time or anything like that, or even really can compare to.
There's an issue with Yoshihashi we talked about before.
Yeah,
I had a discussion on Twitter with somebody about the exact topic that we went over on this show before with Yoshihashi, with his underdog position. Because the final minutes of this match, the final 7 to 8 minutes in this match, they really drew me in, with finally me believing that Yoshihashi would be able to beat Okada. But everything they did before, whenever Yoshihashi was in control of the match, I phased out kind of a little bit, because I was so sure that he would never win. And why invest your time in someone that you know isn't winning? And that's the point here. The point I made is that they should have given Yoshihashi some kind of win before the G1 Climax.
I said that.
Yes, I know. I know we said that here. Yeah. And it's what you got to say about this to the benefit of the performers here in the match, because Okada and Yoshihashi were able to draw you into believing that Yoshihashi would be able to beat Okada, but it could have been much, much easier if Yoshihashi was a more believable underdog. And so they had to work so hard. They had to go for the butterfly lock 3 times before anybody believed that Okada may be tapping out.
Yeah. And that move hasn't beaten anybody in forever. You know, so yeah, they just don't give him anything, like, really. But I think that's a credit to him, especially him in this match, that because I told you last time, it felt like the fans finally got into him after he beat Elgin, and I was skeptical if they would follow him along, but I felt like they really did bring the fans into it by the end of this match here for Yoshihashi, this guy who I never really bought that could win, unfortunately. I wish it would have happened, but, you know, I think that it just, I never bought it at all in this match, and I just tried to enjoy it for what they were doing, because he showed a lot of great fire, and I thought he wrestled his ass off here in this match, to be honest with you, to really improve it, especially on shows where, like I said, really this was a completely underwhelming show, up and down, and they needed to do something to get the fans into it, and I thought Okada, he did good too in this match. We're seeing more of the original Rainmaker, as predicted, him winning all of his matches and going back. I love the callback to the original
Rainmaker. Amazing moment. I screamed so loud when I saw that they were doing this awkward moment, or recreating this awkward moment from their first encounter.
Yes.
And what put it over was that Yoshihashi just kicked out.
Yes, that was great. So that was awesome. And I was really happy too. If you listen to the English commentary, what little we heard of it after some technical difficulties, so to speak, on the show after the, I think it was the White Fale match, but something knocked the sound out at some point during this match, and so they were going on, and Rocky was just saying, like, this just shows you here, I think they did a very bad job of putting over this main event. We've given them praise. The first thing we see in this match is Rocky says, oh, I was here when they wrestled the first time in 2012, and I thought Yoshihashi was going to be the big star. And then he says, oh, was I really wrong about that one? You know, and it's like, they just keep talking about how crappy Yoshihashi is, pretty much, and they're not giving him any credit, because that's not really what we're seeing. Like, we're seeing a guy that really gets nothing, gets no push whatsoever, and the crowd's getting into him facing the top star of the company.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening for a reason, and I think he deserves a lot more credit from everybody instead of just being pushed as this loser like they keep giving him. I think that really hurts him a lot more than anything, is his presentation, his look. Just like I said about Tonga, I mentioned his theme music. To me, Yoshihashi's theme music is not descript at all. I think he doesn't have, and I really like his look for him, so to speak, because I think it's a kind of like do-it-yourself kind of look. And as the wrestler, though, I really love what he brings to the table. And to me, if I were to pick anybody, I definitely wouldn't pick anybody into my, over any of the top eight of B-Block, really. But him and Elgin, to me, have been the A-Block people that had, they could say, they've had a good tournament. I don't think really... There's been a lot of solid, a lot of nondescript. I don't think there's really been that much bad outside of two people that wrestled on this show. Huh. Everyone else has really been solid, at least. And Paige has tried hard, I think. Tried really hard. But the only two I would say that were would say they have had actively good tournaments would be Yoshihashi and Elgin. And I think Okada will step up, too, because now he's getting such a spotlight. It's really going to be hard for him to not, you know, so... I like the match overall. Yeah. The main event was really good.
Let's go in a different direction. Let's go to Jay White. You just mentioned him. He lost to Bad Luck Fale. Fale picking up two more points. And this match didn't work for various reasons, two of which are that A, it was a heel versus heel match, and they could have easily had a better match if, for example, Jay White was a babyface in this match. But they chose that both guys should be the bad guys here, and it didn't give the crowd anything to really get into. And the second thing is the storyline is not really delivering for Fale. It is delivering much more for Tama Tonga, in my opinion, than it is for Bad Luck Fale.
I can see that. I can see that a little bit. To me... Outside of guys that are really popular, like Naito and Omega, Tonga hasn't really stood out, and Fale hasn't stood out. And to me, you look at this match here, and I think your points were totally fair and totally realistic. I just don't think this was a good match in any way between these two. When you look at their wrestling, if this had been a straight-up match, this would have been a really bad match. And then you have all the other stuff that's going on that we've done. I did like, if there was one saving grace out of this atrocious pro wrestling match we watched, I kind of liked that they told a little bit of a story with White doing the ref bump like he's done in all of his other matches, and that costing him in the end and leading to Fale winning. So I thought that was a nice little touch of the storyline. The wrestling itself has just not been there for us. And these two, I don't think they've had good tournaments at all. I know a lot of people like Switchblade, but if you look at his matches, to me... I think this all could have been executed a lot better overall. From where we're at right now, we still got some time to go. We're still only halfway through the tournament, really. Yeah. But if you look at Jay, he hasn't had that standout match or really any kind of moment that I think he really needed overall. Because I think everybody who gets pushed, you got to have a moment that you could hang your hat on. And I know beating Okada was supposed to be that, but the way they've told the Okada story, where he was so down and out, I think. You know,
yeah.
I think it could have been executed a lot better, all of this, really. And ultimately, though, the problem with me is that these matches just aren't very good, what he's bringing to the table. I think really all of his matches have disappointed in some way. And that's a shame, because I really want to like him. I think his character work is really strong, actually. I still think he's a really good character. But the matches just haven't brought it. In this G1 tournament, he's been a down point of a bad block already.
Well, that's your opinion. I still think that his first two matches with Okada and Tanahashi were not really his coming out party for the Switchblade gimmick, but I think that those were significant wins for him to be a player in New Japan that fans take more seriously than before now, after he beat those two guys. But I can see your point, too, with Okada just bouncing back, and with the thing is with White now, he is also now kind of going in the 50-50 direction, which isn't helping out.
Yeah.
For him.
And that's the problem right there. We saw it, I always go back to this, Sonata, huge win at the start, got a ton of momentum. By the end of that tournament, he had like 8 points, and nobody even cared by the end of it, you know, and I think that's, going that route with White won't help, but I just don't think his matches are standing out enough to, even if they booked him stronger, I don't think he would really be on the rise. Like, someone like Sonata, he's getting a great push. But also, he's stepping up in the ring, too. And I don't see White doing what Sonata's doing in B-Block overall.
No. That's not the case. But let's go back to B-Block, because we have a show to talk about from Saturday. Yes, definitely a hoot. Saturday in Nagoya. 8.14 on Cage Match right now for the entire show. And we have two matches on this show. And I'm still not sure which match I liked better from these two matches, because they were both outstanding. Yes, I was thinking when Kenny Omega and Sanada came to the ring, I was thinking, okay, nothing is going to top Ibushi versus Ishii for me. But they went out, and then they went out to even top that match. And I can find good reasons for each of these two matches to be the best match on this show. But first off, we got Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tama Tonga, where Zack beat Tama Tonga in 11 minutes by DQ. Continuing this weird story that now Tama Tonga is back to being DQ'd again. This match involved Taka as well as Tangaloa. And what was so goofy about it was that there was this one moment where Taka was laid out on the outside, but that knocked him out for 10 minutes or so, which was horrible.
Don't you know that's how it works in wrestling?
Yes, I know, managers? I know. Yeah.
This sucked. This was another bad match, I thought. And Zack Sabre on top of it, and you're just having this terrible match with him. That's a shame.
Yeah.
And I didn't think the crowd was especially into this either. Like, definitely not as much as Naito. But nope. I don't know.
The next match was very down my alley, and I loved it. I loved what Juice Robinson and Toru Yano did here in this match. With them both, it started out with Juice and Toru Yano both having these corner pads, and I think it was a perfect moment for Juice to pick up his first 2 points, because Toru Yano, of course, we know that he's the guy that can finish you from any position and he can roll you up in an instant. And it worked out for me here, and so I liked this match, and it wasn't too long for me with 8 minutes, 28 seconds. And happy that Juice is now finally winning, and for Toru Yano, it was another match that I liked.
Yano, you know, this was another Yano match, like you said. I didn't really understand about Omega and the Juice match with Omega, because I thought they set the stage for Juice to get a big win there, but it didn't happen. My only problem with that is because I kind of like, as a concept, the story of an injury costing a guy, a contender, a lot of wins earlier on and knocking him out.
No, that's what we have to talk about here. I think you wanted to talk about the cast.
Exactly. Yeah, so basically here he unwrapped the cast. The cast came off, finally. And now I just feel like he's going to win all of his matches without the cast. It's just going to magically be that way. And he had the jabs, he took the cast off, and that's great, but I don't know. I thought for the new champion to go... you know, the new U.S. champion to go 0-4, I thought it might have been the bad time. It's a good idea that was executed poorly, to be honest with you. I think, the Fire Squad is a bad idea executed poorly, and this cast was a good idea that wasn't executed.
The thing is, it wasn't really a cast. It was
like a wrap.
It was like a wrap, more like a bandage, and there was nothing casty about it at all.
No.
Why would it hurt to punch someone with this kind of bandage?
That is a good point. Like I said, I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't into this at all anyway. Like this whole storyline, I was kind of hoping for it to be over with sooner or later. And now we've got to that point. I think he could win some more matches now.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's great and all. But this Toru Yano match, 8-minute match, nothing offensive about it, but not really my style either, I have to say. But it was fine.
Probably much more your style was Kota Ibushi versus Tomohiro Ishii. I call
this was everybody's style.
I call it a ceremony of violence on Twitter. Because at one point they were just chopping each other's throats, and Kota Ibushi, when you looked at him and when you looked at Tomohiro Ishii lying on the ground, and Ibushi was just kicking his head, and the ref had to intervene and say, hey, we don't kick the head of the opponent on the ground here. It was amazing how you just saw that Kota Ibushi was just trying to end this guy, and Ishii bounced back with this incredible throat chop on Ibushi, and it was just violence throughout the match. It even looked... at some point, it looked like an 80s match, where it seemed like one of the guys in the match didn't really cooperate with the other, because the sit-down powerbomb that Kota Ibushi did looked a little awkward. Not as shiny as it usually does.
And I think for the better.
Yeah, for the better, definitely. And well, in the end, this one was probably the match that everybody raved about, and for a good reason.
Oh man, this was phenomenal. Definitely, if this wasn't the best match of the tournament, it wasn't number three. Like, you know, I feel like it has to be up there. This to me is a strong match of the year candidate, much like Ishii and Goto. I'm going to be going back and forth for nights on end. Which one I liked better?
The people in cage match are also going back and forth with it, because yesterday Kota Ibushi versus Ishii had surpassed Goto versus Ishii, but now Goto versus Ishii is back again on top. It's 9.7 for Goto Ishii and 9.62 for Ibushi Ishii.
For all we know, that match of the year race could be going down to the last day of the year. We may still be having changes in December about this. We'll give you the update on the show about which one gets a higher rating by the end of the year, because I think you have to be crazy not to rate this as one of the best matches. Ibushi, to me, it's funny because his reputation was always of this high flyer guy, but his never say die attitude, going all out to win, and just do it using his striking ability, which he's had even before wrestling. I think that, to me, he's shown that so much over the last few years, and this to me has to be one of his best matches. Really, since that Nakamura match at Wrestle Kingdom, I think this might be my favorite one that he's had. And Ishii has so many great matches, how can you even pick a favorite? You know, he has like 10 that you can go to. I totally agree with what you said earlier. Ishii, to me, has to be the MVP at the halfway point. And I love this match so much. Both guys, you mentioned the powerbomb was great. These are the only two that could go into the crowd and make crowd brawling interesting. Yes. I think so. That right there gives it huge points, because
amazing that in a match where they nearly killed each other, Kota Ibushi was able to get in a moonsault from the balcony.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, and it was great. Like, it was awesome, and I loved it. Ishii, there was great moments of fire too, just where Ishii would be like, you know, he'd say to do his traditional, they'd have a strike battle, he'd say, "Come on." And then when Ibushi brought it, and then Ishii, that made him even more crazy and fired up and wanted to, and he just hit him with this huge forearm strike that he hit him with, and then that led to the deadlift superplex, and then Ibushi popped up, and they had a great exchange that ended with the Pele kick by Ibushi. So everything about this was great. Two of the most talented men in this tournament, I have to say, and Ishii, despite his reputation, again, as this heavy hitter, and well-deserved, I thought his selling, much like the last match versus Zach, was really on display here, because he really made Ibushi and put him over, and put his striking over, like I said, and his big moves, like you said, and put him over in a way that was believable and just great. Brilliant, brilliant professional wrestling match here.
Yeah. And, well, how do you follow this? You can't, because...
Yeah, we saw that they couldn't.
Naito and Goto were in trouble after this one, and it seemed like they said to each other, okay, you know, we are not going to be following this, so let's just go out here, have a good match, and let's go back.
Yes, I completely agree. This was a high-end A-block match that we saw here, which means it was like a very decent match. I had this at 3.25 stars, and I think a three-star range is where it was destined to be. I will say this, there are a couple of things. I still say, much like the Yano match, I think Goto really put himself into those first three matches to be the MVP, and I think he took a lot out of himself here. Obviously, following off that amazing match was going to be a huge quest for anybody, so I agree with you. I totally agree with that they both probably didn't put their best foot forward, and I also think that these two don't have that great chemistry that we've seen with someone like Goto and Ishii or Naito. Ishii and anybody, pretty much, I think their last match last year was very disappointing, if you remember their main event match from the G1 last year. This was better than that, even following the match, but like you said, I still don't think it was their best effort, but I can't really hate on them too much. But still, Goto taking a step back after his first three great matches. And Naito had a great tournament too, but again, so-so match here. Hopefully they can bounce back on the next show, which I'm sure they will.
Yeah. So, in the main event, Sanada and Kenny Omega went all out again after Naito and Goto basically didn't, which was kind of good, because you were able to breathe for one match with Naito and Goto not going full throttle here. But Kenny Omega and Sanada did. Kenny is now 5-0. Beat Sanada in 20 minutes, and I absolutely loved this one, because very early on, Kenny Omega went for Sanada's leg, and you could see it throughout the match that Sanada was always kind of pulling his leg behind. He was kind of limping, and that led to some points where he was trying to go for his rounding body press, and it didn't work out for him. And this one situation where I thought that the rounding body press would be complete was absolutely amazing, because Kenny Omega basically rolled out of the way in the last split second of it. And also, when Kenny Omega was going for the "you can't escape," where usually everybody escapes.
Yeah, it's funny. I have to say a story about that. Whenever he does that, Grandpa Ken is watching with me, and he immediately, it's guaranteed, when that happens, Ken gets a scowl on his face and says, "He just did." So that's what I always look forward to.
I think it worked one time in this tournament, but that's also the point of this move, that he can escape.
Yes.
You can't escape.
I love it.
It's great. And in that moment when Kenny was going for his moonsault, Sanada was able to get his knees up, but it hurt him because Sanada had his legs worked over by Kenny before. And that also kind of led to the finish with extremely, exceptionally great counters back and forth from the Katayoko no Tenshi to the Gull End. They really had me buying that Kenny would tap to the Skull End in the end, but he was able to get the Katayoko no Tenshi in and win this match. To me, this was just as outstanding as Ibushi and Ishii.
I think that's a really cool thing on your part. I didn't like it that much, but it was still a really good match, I thought. I thought it was a really great match, and a great performance by Sanada. Again, I thought he especially really stood out. And not just... I think everything you said was totally true. I loved his selling. I loved his offense. The counter work was phenomenal at the end. Mm-hmm. But a spot that stood out to me, I loved when there was a spot where Omega was on the floor and Sanada faked a dive, like teased a dive, and then held the ropes open for Omega to come back in.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. Like, I was like, wow, he's actually, like, this is great. He's showing something that we haven't seen, the charisma he showed here in this match. And he sold well. He brought the physical charisma again here. And everything about him I thought was really great stuff, off the charts, and something that you could see Sanada almost growing right to our eyes as a main event level talent in this match. And I have to say, I think maybe I would have been with you. I think I don't want to criticize this too much, but I do think if Sanada had won here, it would have been like he's arrived. Mm-hmm, like, I think that would have been a huge win if he did it. And I don't know where they could go that would be better than that for Omega. Omega's undefeated, which, you know me, Strig, I love protecting the world champion in all cases, and that's never a bad idea for me. But I do question, I think this felt like the night that Sanada should have got that big win. If he had gotten it, I think it would have been a huge moment that I think that could have maybe not overshadowed the Ibushi match, rather, excuse me. But I think it would have given us all a huge talking point and made this one of the most standout shows of the tour. Still a really strong match, I thought, no doubt about it. Good stuff from both Omega and Sanada here. And I think both men, Omega continues to rise up and have solid matches the more he wrestles, and Sonata's had a great tournament overall, I would say.
I think this would have been the perfect moment to just call an audible.
Yeah.
And just say, okay, we have to change this around, because you can just feel the magic here. And
yeah, oh, totally agree.
Would have been a great moment.
And I wonder where they're going from here with Omega, because it's like, he's undefeated, he's not... It really wouldn't make any sense for him to win the block, you would think. So he's going to have to lose at least two more matches.
Mm-hmm.
One, obviously, Ibushi. Of those left he's facing, who would be better than this? I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And that's just kind of my feeling on that. Because I think he's got Zach, Yano, and... who else does he have? He hasn't wrestled Ishii yet.
Nope.
So those are his three left. And I think Sanada would have been better than all three of those. Has more upside, especially this night. I can't imagine this main event replicating this the aura of this main event. I think I totally agree with what you said. It was a very magical night. I'm liking this match more just hearing you talk about it. I already liked it. So really good stuff. This was a great show. I have to say, I really loved it, even with the disappointing Naito and Goto match. I thought this was still a really strong show.
Yeah, overall. Very strong show, and that kind of goes into the direction of the questions that we got here. First one is, what is your opinion about Sanada in the G1? Do you think the copying of his enemies in ring style could become his calling? Yeah, we kind of answered this question already, and I think it really works out for him to really adapt to anyone who he is facing, and he has proven in this tournament that he is able to go various styles. And the amazing point that he made is that wrestling is more than just dropping each other on the head, and he's going for that. He can work with anybody, basically.
Yeah, and I think it's a big improvement. Really, where he's been and where he was, I think that kind of style and what he's doing in the ring is just awesome. I do have to say one thing on Sanada. When in my wrestling career, I made a mention of note that a lot of my moves came from the video games more than anything. So whenever I played the video games, my favorite thing to do wasn't to do my own moves. It was to steal the signature of my opponent. I'd always do that, like guaranteed. Whenever they brought the styles in, I'd always pick Showman so I could steal the moves out of everybody. That's what I wanted more than anything. So Sanada adapting that gimmick warms my heart, because it's one of my favorite things is to have the Mirror Man type of style. So I love him, man. I think he's having a phenomenal tournament.
Which, by the way, Tomohiro Ishii has also done in the Ibushi match, where he stole the Kamigoye.
Yeah, that was great. He even wrestled Zack style, too. He even grabbed you a little, too. So,
right.
Ishii, but putting him over almost sounds redundant at this point. He's always so great. Like, every year, he rewrites the book, pretty much, and he's doing it again this year. And Sanada is the breakout guy, I think, overall. Ishii may be the MVP or the best guy right now. I really love Goto's first three matches, but Sanada, the breakout star, I think.
Yes, and the second one is, when do you think Jay White will completely turn against Chaos? That's a difficult one. Dylan, do you have any idea?
Well, he has the win over Okada, and they seem to be pushing him. My idea before the tournament was that I thought it would be smart to book this out where the last day would come and he'd need Okada to lose to move forward. So that way he could try to interfere and turn on Okada, and that would set up their storyline. I don't know if that's really going to happen. How they set it up, it seems kind of like that might not be how it plays out. So if that doesn't happen, if Okada's not in the main event, you'd think maybe that would be where it is at a Wrestle Kingdom, because that seems to be the only pre-made match they have right now. And that's purely speculation on my part, not even really educated. But besides that, I don't know. It would be hard to say. If that doesn't happen, perhaps the day after Wrestle Kingdom, he would turn on them and join them. I think that would be a decent starting spot.
The thing is, my idea of JY joining the firing squad, at least for now, is out of the window after the match that we got with Bad Luck Fale. But I think they can still go into that direction if they choose to.
And this match doesn't matter at all in 5 months, on the storylines.
I think with the way they are telling the story, they can drag it a little, because nobody in Chaos is really opposing Jay White right now, and Jay White is kind of the only guy who is telling the story. So they will have to get two or three other guys on track with that story.
Hey, Rocky is.
Rocky is, well, he's on commentary. He's the only one.
So Wrestle Kingdom match, Rocky versus White.
So maybe they will get something done by the time Destruction or King of Pro Wrestling comes, and they will drag it out until Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah.
And actually, on the undercard, Yo is he's helping on there. So they're kind of teasing something like that, maybe. Maybe they can break out a couple of guys. But he didn't help Sho, he helped Yo.
Yeah.
So that could lead to a split to him. Maybe you could get Yo and maybe somebody else that would be on his side. But I don't know. I'm just really not into the storyline. So like I said, I haven't put much thought into it. But I do think that it will happen eventually. I think he's going to turn on them, obviously. And it would only make sense. Could he go to the firing squad? Yeah, I think that would make sense. He obviously has the ties. Him and Hanari both could do that. It would even up the numbers in the Bullet Club feud. It makes all the sense in the world. But with this Yo thing, that's got me kind of questioning it a little bit, because I think that he could lead his own new faction as well if he wanted to.
Yeah, and then the final question is a quick one, because the question is, are there any updates about Hiromu since his return from the States? And the only update we got was on the first day of the G1 Climax, where he posted this photo of Daryl saying, "I'm fine, thank you," in Japanese, English, and in Spanish. And nothing has really been reported so far. We knew that President Harold May was visiting him in hospital and hooking him up with New Japan World in the hospital. So he has been following the tournament, but nothing, no updates on his condition.
My only thing to add, can I change my prediction from Shibata coming back to Hiromu coming back on the last day and him coming out saying, "I'm alive"? Yeah. That's all. Imagine that. He just says the same thing
Shibata
did. That's true. And walks off.
It would be amazing, especially because Dragon Lee is such a big Shibata fan.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be like stealing Dragon Lee's thunder too. That would be his revenge. He gets to cosplay as Shibata. And then that leads to Shibata's debut right after. He comes out, he says, "I too am still alive." That's all. So they're both alive. That's my prediction for G1 final. Both men will be alive.
Alrighty. Yeah, so you know, I'm really enjoying this tournament. I'm enjoying all the discussions about the tournament. There are some outstanding matches on this G1, and I especially like to get into discussions on Twitter, as I mentioned here already on this show. I mentioned a couple of discussions we had here over the course of the last weeks, and if you chose to get into discussions with us on Twitter, you can of course do that. I am at Striga, Striga, and I think Dylan, you are on Twitter as well.
That's right. Check me out at Dylan Zero Sky. Talk about all things G1, Japanese wrestling, All Japan, any company you want to talk about, because I've been watching a little bit of everything lately, trying my best, and hopefully the G1 continues to deliver both excellent matches and great discussion points, because even the bad matches, I think, are things that I don't necessarily like, all have a lot to talk about and a lot of interesting things to talk about. So I think that's the beauty of G1. And also, I would like to call out anybody to let me know and let us both know your MVPs at the halfway point of the G1. I think that would be good. Striga, who do you say is the top man of each block? I know you said Ishii earlier.
Yeah.
Are you stand by that? It's A block. Anybody you would pick as the top dog of A block?
Well, A block is a little more difficult, but I think I'm going with Evil as the top guy in Block A.
Wow, Evil?
Yeah.
What was your favorite match of his?
My favorite Evil match probably... Wait a sec, I gotta actually look into that. Well, Evil was great, but Michael Elgin was good too, and maybe you can also make a case for Michael Elgin, because he has had great matches with everybody, basically, in this tournament. Yeah, it's we don't have that many Evil matches in the database, in the match guide right now, but I always feel like in Evil's matches he's bringing a lot to the table and is trying to have a great match with anybody. And if you really look at it, who else could you pick? I think you picked Yoshihashi as your MVP, right?
Yep.
Yoshihashi, that's a fair point as well.
Three great matches and two does. I think Elgin's the most consistent of everyone, but Yoshi has the highest highs. Because I think his three matches, Okada, Makabe, and Elgin. And Elgin, in fact, were all three of the top matches in A block. Evil, yeah. I like him, but I don't know. Like I said, he hasn't really stood out that much to
That's
me in
true.
Block.
I think he's just consistently very good. Whereas
I think
different people in this block have had not so good matches.
I also thought he had the worst Yoshihashi match, too.
That's true.
Like I said, it really wasn't his... Yeah. The botch, like, that was on its way to having a good match until the botch happened.
I don't think that you can make the point that either Tanahashi or Okada are MVPs in this tournament, because it's not really working out for them. Suzuki, not that much, too. Makabe, no. That doesn't really leave that many people.
I think really, like I said, to me, those two stand out to me. Elgin and Yoshihashi as people had good tournaments. And I think White and Folly have had really underwhelming tournaments. And everyone else is like, they're solid.
You know, the reason why I can't go for Yoshihashi is because he had this match with Minoru Suzuki that I really didn't like.
Oh, that wasn't a great match either. Like I said, don't get me wrong. I think he's the most up and down member. He's got three great matches that I really liked, and two that I didn't think were that great. Because I agree with you on Suzuki, on the Suzuki match. I didn't think that was great either. I think Elgin has been the most consistent. But actually, I will say this. If I were to pick a third person out of all of those guys, I think they're all kind of similar in quality, so to speak. I think Paige is trying the hardest to get there. Yeah. Though I think he puts the most effort in, because I think all these guys could do better. I think Paige is doing his best to stand out, and it hasn't worked, but the block really hasn't helped him much. Like, the guys he's wrestled haven't really brought him up to that level. Like, if he and Tonga switch blocks, I think Paige would have a lot higher match quality across the board, because I don't think he has been the issue in his matches. I think he's tried as hard as he could and done the best he could. So he would be my number three out of everybody, because he's tried hard. But the match quality isn't that high in April.
Yeah, that's the same for Evil. I just have this feeling that this guy is just out there to have a good match, but it hasn't really worked out for him yet in this tournament. But maybe he'll have a good match, because he still has Minoru Suzuki left, Evil has Hiroshi Tanahashi left, and Evil has Okada left, so big chances for him to still wind up in the top three for this block.
Yeah, his opponents weren't the top either. Yeah. He faced Spale, Makabe earlier on. Makabe's tried hard too, but I think we'll see. Oh, I think his story is yet to be told, how good he can be overall.
Definitely. Yeah, so this has been it for this portion of the G1. We are kind of halfway through now. We are going to be back for a show later this week, because there are going to be shows on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we'll definitely schedule a new point for a new show. So up until now, I hope you, the listeners, have been enjoying our G1 coverage. We've gotten some very good reviews. So if you enjoy our reviews, please tell other people so that they listen to this show too. And for me, that's it. This was the Eastern Lariat. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you for the reviews, everyone. Sayonara.
Worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.